Hello there. Sorry, I was just struggling with the unmute button. Thank you so much for inviting me along to speak today. And thanks to everybody who's doing service at this meeting, because as we all know, it doesn't run without you guys. So I'm just going to talk about my journey. Full caveat, this is just my own experience, strength, and hope that I'll be sharing. And as a result, yours may be very, very different, and some of the things that I found useful may be actively destructive for you. But I'm hoping that something today will resonate with someone, and part of me getting rid of the shame about my experiences is to share them with people. So that's where I'm coming from. So I came into OA in the era of Zoom in January 2021, and so I've had about almost a year and a half of abstinence and about a year in recovery since then. And a lot's changed, but ostensibly nothing much has changed as well. So when I started off, to give a little bit of context, I was in the middle of a mental health crisis. I was roughly around 29 stone, 400 pounds, 185 kilos, whatever metric you're currently working with. And since then, quite a few things have changed physically. I've lost about 120 pounds or 8.5 stone or 55 kilos, again, whatever metric you're working with. But given my starting weight, I'm still fat. I was fat when I came into OA and I'm fat now. When I came into OA, I had mental health issues. I still have mental health issues now. Unfortunately, the program hasn't taken those away from me. And when I came into OA, I was impatient, judgmental, and self-critical. And despite me saying the Step 7 prayer every single day, those character defects are still alive and well. However, what OA has allowed me to see is that I came into OA thinking I had a food problem, and I didn't. I had a problem with life and dealing with it. And I used food to numb out all of the emotions that I felt, good and bad, whenever they got too intense. And it was my medication to help me survive in life. And although putting that medication down and detoxing from it was really painful, I've managed to come out the other side of it. And I'm still not at the point of living a life beyond my wildest dreams, or at least I hope not. I hope there's still a bit of leeway to go with getting there. But I'm living a life that I didn't think was possible when I came into program in January 2021. So let's start back there. I was incredibly obese, as I said, mental health crisis. I was doing probably less than 100 steps a day, and I was binging 3 to 4 times a day. So my addiction had been increasing steadily and getting worse for the previous 10 years. When I told my brother and sister-in-law as they were about to get married that I couldn't be their bridesmaid because of my weight. And they said, well, just diet or stop eating. My brother, in fact, actually went, well, just put down the fork because he'd lost a significant amount of weight by himself. And I said, I don't know how. And so I had a decade between sort of admitting that I had a problem that I couldn't control and actually getting to a stage where I felt like I was able to do something about it. And I came into OA because it was lockdown over here in the UK. I was in crisis and I was seeing my therapist once a week, who is an eating disorder specialist. And she said to me, I can't give you the amount of help that you need. Like, you don't have the money to see me more than once a week. I don't have the availability to see you more than once a week. But have you heard of Overeaters Anonymous? And I was sort of like, no, what's that? And she was like, basically, Google it, go along to a meeting and see if there's anything that kind of rings true for you. So I went along to my first meeting that night because, well, I was unemployed and I had nothing else to do, basically. And I was really disappointed because I expected to go into it and find loads of really fat, unhappy people. And that's not what I got at all. I found loads of people who were a healthy weight and seemed really calm and really zen. So I was a bit kind of like, oh, well, this isn't what I thought it would be, but let's stick around and see what they've got to say. And interestingly, what people started sharing were their stories of recovery. And for a lot of them, it's that they had been very unhappy people, but because of this program, and what it can do to help you live your life. They weren't in those positions anymore. And I had the feeling, which I think a lot of people do, of going, oh, well, it's great that it worked for them, but I don't think it will work for me because, you know, I'm so special and a program that works with billions of people can't possibly work for me as well. And it took me a long time before I had that hope for myself that I was going to be able to get better. But it was hearing about the hope from other people that allowed that small little spark to reignite and go, maybe this, there is a different future for me. Because I knew that if I carried on the way that I was going to die. And I don't say that to be dramatic. I say that as a matter of fact, either from the physical implications of what I was doing to my body, or because my mental health would have got so bad to the point where I would have taken my own life. So that's where, that's the state I was in coming into OA. And I'd had a weird sort of acceptance around that. I was quite sort of not happy, but accepting of the fact that, yeah, I would die young and I would die obese. And it's entirely possible that I would become bedbound. There's a line in the big book where it talks about, you know, being at the gates of death. And I had my nose pressed up against the cold iron of the gates of death at that point. And that was the position I had to be in before I finally did something about it. It wasn't the restricting of my life into ever decreasing circles that allowed me to not do what I was able to do. It was not being able to take care of myself in terms of my personal hygiene. All of that was really terrible and upsetting, but it didn't stop me from eating. It was only the threat of death that made me consider that maybe I should do something different. And again, I just want to talk out that this is not a disease of willingness and control. If it was just negative consequences that would ward us off doing something that was destroying ourselves, we would have all have stopped long ago. OA wouldn't exist and none of us would be here today. And despite overwhelming negative consequences, I still had to get to the very brink of things before I considered doing something different. Because food has been in my life as my longest and possibly least functional relationship. And it was take undoing habits of decades for me to get into recovery. And that's not an easy thing to do. So anyway, I listened to people's stories. And for the first time, I felt a vague sense of relief because here were people talking about the same crazy things that I had in my head. People thinking and doing crazy things and insane things to get hold of food that went beyond, you know, mere love that we have for other people. And it was a really humbling thing to suddenly realize that this wasn't just me. The only person I'd ever talked to about my eating was my therapist. And suddenly realizing that there was this whole group of people who just got it, who I didn't have to talk to and like give a nicely sort of carefully constructed framework to guide them very carefully through exactly why this was an issue for me. No, there was just people there who got it. And even now, I find it an incredibly powerful thing that although we just have first names in this room today, every single one of you understands this part of me better than anybody else in my life, no matter how close they are to me. And that's a very, very powerful and beautiful thing. And it led to me thinking about this acceptance of reality, the acceptance of the reality that I've got myself into and what I had to do to try and do something different. And I wish I could tell you that there was a kind of like a burning holy epiphany that came upon me that made me put down the food, but there wasn't. It was a Thursday. That's all I can tell you about it. It wasn't momentous for any reason. I did a full-on binge the night before, whilst in an OA meeting with my camera off, by the way, which I think is a rite of passage if you join in the times of Zoom. And I'd also had a therapy appointment. I'd been in OA for, I think, about a month by that point, and I'd been going to meetings every single day. And there was nothing about that Thursday that differed from any other day, apart from I woke up and I thought, sod it, I'll try it for 2 weeks. I've done diets for 2 weeks that were far more restrictive than this. Let's just see how it goes. And I'm very happy to say that I'm almost a year and a half into that. And I'm still just seeing how it goes, obviously, because I don't want to commit to these things too much. But there was nothing about it that led me into it. None of the fear went away for me. It was that fear of change was finally outweighed by my fear of the inevitable.
It's true.
That's all it was. Thank you, Gloria. And it was only like a 51-49% split, folks. It wasn't an overwhelming, oh, now I feel calm and at peace with my decision. It absolutely wasn't. So my motivation when I came into it was basically to lose weight and to see if I could do a diet for 2 weeks. And so I put the food down and I felt worse. And nobody told me that, obviously. Nobody told me that when I first put the food down that I would actually feel worse than when I was eating. Because I put down my coping mechanism, and it was a coping mechanism I'd had for 3.5 decades. And until I worked the steps, I didn't have anything else to take its place. And as we know, the steps take a little bit of time to get through. And so what I was faced with is this overwhelming tsunami of feelings. I had to accept the reality that I was in. That included me being incredibly honest, which I wasn't very good at, and having to accept how deluded I'd been about my life. And I knew I lied to loads of other people, but I hadn't realised quite how much I lied to myself. And I realised that you have to choose your pain in early abstinence. You have to either feel pain from the discomfort of sitting with your feelings, or you have to feel pain from eating, but you can't do anything to just get rid of the discomfort. And luckily, because of the support of my fellows who were like, well, yeah, early abstinence and not eating is really painful, but once you get through it, there is something better on the other side and it doesn't last forever. I was able to choose the pain of abstinence and stick with it. And I have absolutely no idea how those people with jobs, responsibilities, children, I have no idea how you get abstinent. I was doing nothing except OA, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. So I've got absolutely no idea. Those of you who've got literally anything else to do in your day, do it. And what that gave me was a huge amount of clarity, because all of these feelings came washing over me, and it allowed me to see just how badly I was coping with life. Just how badly every single situation I found myself in, which wasn't much because I was basically living in my house at that point, every single situation I found myself in produced some sort of extreme emotion in me. And I was crying constantly for good and bad reasons. I cried because I saw a cloud and thought it was really beautiful. You know, I cried because I forgot to press reheat on the microwave and therefore my dinner was cold. I mean, I was joking at the time with my sister-in-law that my nephew, who was 4, had more emotional resilience than I did. And it was true. I was suddenly feeling all these feelings that I'd suppressed for a long, long time. And it allowed me to realise just how badly I was doing with life. I was putting myself in all these situations that I couldn't cope with. I wasn't confronting a lot of the feelings that I was dealing with, which made my mental health much worse. And unfortunately, I had to realise that that was the reality of my situation, but I could do something about it. This is a programme of action. It's not for people who want it or for people who need it. It's for people who actually get on and do it. And my sponsor said to me, you can be on the right road, but you'll get run over if you just sit there. And that, for me, summarises my entire experience in programme. And I realised that, you know what? I should not be the person in charge of my life, because I do not have my best interests at heart. I have a very low opinion of myself. I'm working up to self-tolerance, never mind self-love. So the idea that I would be in charge of my life was laughable. And that was the point where I had to try and get in with my higher power and hand it over to somebody who did have my best interests at heart, who would love me unconditionally and support me. And for me, actually, that made quite a lot of sense, because I'd proved over the previous decades that I was really bad at running my life. So when I let my ego go and handed it over to my higher power, things became a little bit easier. They didn't become better, but they became less terrible, I would say. I learned the value in responding to things rather than reacting to things, which is literally me taking a breath and going, okay, before you type back that angry text or send an angry email or, you know, just lash out at whoever you're talking to, maybe just take a breath and be like, right, okay, what is it in my best interest to do here? And be a lot more kind of self-reflective about, okay, how can I handle this situation differently? I had an entire lifetime's worth of not talking to people and not relying on other people for my problems because of my childhood and what I'd experienced there. And so reaching out to other people was incredibly difficult. And I also have social anxiety, which made it doubly difficult. But then it's one of those things of going, okay, well, do you send a message to somebody or do you continue on with this life that you know is going to kill you? And actually, when you put it in those terms, it's like, okay, well, I'll send a text message. And it got easier. It got easier. I still find it difficult now. You know, I find public speaking difficult now because of my anxiety. But if this is what I have to do to keep my abstinence and to keep the sanity that I've gained from program, well, then I'll do it. And unfortunately, I have had to accept that this is a program that I'm going to have to work until I die of something else. Like, that's the reality of it. And so I have to make sure that every single day I am doing the bare minimum to make sure that I am connected with other people in program and connected to my higher power. Because if I don't, it's very easy for me to get back into my own head. And I could convince myself up is down, black is white, you know, in order to get round what I want to do and look for chinks in my armor to get back into the food. And it's that consistency which trumps intensity, because it really is a daily reprieve with this disease. You can't do 6 meetings in one day and then nothing for the rest of the week. That just covers you for that one day, okay? And I'm not saying you should go to a meeting every single day, but for me, I have to have connection with my program and my higher power in some way every single damn day. And that consistency is what gets me through, because it means I have an absolute baseline of what I do. And I still struggle with it. You know, it may have been a year and a half, but that's outweighing 3 decades of learned behavior. Stuff doesn't come naturally. I still have reminders on my phone telling me to do my prayers, to do outreach, which pop up every single day. And I'm able to tick them off and be like, yes, I spoke to someone today. So thank you all, because this means I can get my outreach portion done by, you know, before 12 o'clock midday. So that's really good for me. I can just tick that off my little list and that's done for today. But that doesn't prepare me for tomorrow. And it didn't prepare me for yesterday. It really is a daily reprieve on this. So I'm not quite living a life beyond my wildest dreams. There's a while to go before I get my physical recovery. My spiritual recovery, as you can probably tell, is still very much a work in progress because it doesn't come naturally yet. And emotionally, I'm having to let go of a lot of things that I was carrying from my past. Not what was done to me, which wasn't my fault, but the victim mentality and the trauma identity that I carried around for a long time to help me justify what I was doing to myself and other people. So I still struggle. Even now, I still struggle. But I can absolutely tell you, without a shadow of a doubt, that it's worth it. It's worth doing these daily tasks. And sometimes I do them with love and joy and excitement. And sometimes I do them with resentment and a grudging teenager. Like, oh, I've not done outreach today. But it doesn't matter about my mood. The point is that I do them, because that consistency is what keeps me sane. And it's allowing me to start dreaming about a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I'll let you know when I get there. So thank you very much for letting me share today, and I'll leave it there.